Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday morning. Saturday morning live. Good morning. Yes, it is Saturday morning, and we are live on Internet Radio. This is Professor Applewhite, and I'm your host this morning on the Student to Teacher to Student Internet Radio Show, and our co-host Nazim Rashid will be joining us, and other volunteer staff and board, advisory board members. So stay tuned. Stay tuned for this show this morning. We're so happy to have you here as listeners. We realize that many of you are calling in and listening to the show within the United States and across the waters, we've got callers coming in, listeners, people writing us from Africa, China, France, and we are pleased to know that you are enjoying the topics that we are coming up with that seem to be very timely today. We're going to talk today about social contracts, developing a new social contract between students and teachers. This is Professor Applewhite. I'm your host this morning on Student to Teacher Internet Radio. I want you to call in and tell us what you think. We've got the board is lighting up here. We have people that are willing to come on in and talk about this, how to develop a new social contract. So let's say good morning to a few people. Good morning. This is Professor Applewhite. Hello. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is Donna and Jerry Govan.
Good morning.
Good morning. Professor Applewhite says good morning to you and embraces you with love and peace. It's good to have you on board. Listeners, these are two of our advisory board members that are just wonderful assets to have anytime that there's a question. Not only can we just go to them gain their timely wisdom, but also look in their book, Taking the E Out of Ego and Going. And so we'll come back to Jerry and Donna Govan in just a moment as we ask other listeners to introduce themselves. Let's see who this is on 480-213. Hi, how are you? This is Professor Applewhite.
Hi there, Professor Applewhite. This is Dorothy.
Well, hello, Dorothy, our wonderful resource consultant for White Apple Institute. It's a pleasure to have you on this morning. Will you be able to describe our show this morning?
Oh, yes. Would you like me to read it now?
I would like to. Let's go ahead and make sure that we've got all the listeners and acknowledge them, and I'll come right back to you, Dorothy. Thank you.
Sure.
Hold on just a moment. Hello, this is Professor Applewhite.
Nazim Rashid.
Nazim Rashid, that's right. We can't begin the show without our wonderful co-host, Nazim Rashid. As he's completing his book that's soon to hit the marketplace called Mentoring. It's about mentoring, and the title is now, is it Connecting Our Youth, or we're moving a little bit more into mentoring?
Yeah, now it's called just simply Reconnecting.
Reconnecting, and that reconnecting means getting in touch with that inner child. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I don't want to ever forget my inner child. child, Nazim Rashid. I never want to forget that.
All right.
Who's on our next line here, and then we'll get back to Dorothy, and she'll tell us some of the things we're going to try to highlight this morning. Hello, good morning. This is Professor Applewhite. How are you?
This is Maria.
Maria, well, it's good.
Good morning. Hello.
This morning, Maria, as one of our advisory board members, and to share with us, just to share a little bit with you about you to our listeners, Maria is developing our general membership, and she is dedicated to developing that. So we'd like you to sign into our website whenever you have an opportunity to do that. Dorothy will give you the call names and telephone numbers to connect to White Apple Institute. That's who sponsors this show this morning. So, Dorothy, back to you. How about telling us a little bit about developing a new social contract between students and teachers?
Okay.
What are we
going to
discuss this morning?
Oh, discussion is about the social contract, how it's developed for adult learners to successfully communicate and socialize with others. In our present educational system, we have many so-called contracts that address positive behavioral supports in the kindergarten through high school classrooms. However, when teachers, counselors, and adult learners or students have varying ethnic and cultural groups are engaged in the classroom or workplace environment, they're in a new form of social contract, which must be developed and implemented differently. The staff at White Apple Institute encourages listeners to call in and call in to our show and share how they have developed social contracts, written or oral, that help us communicate and socialize for success in the classroom and the workplace.
Very good, very good. Before we get into the social contract, that we're hoping that as ourselves, we're all students and teachers interchangeably throughout our life. So before we get into the social contract that we're going to talk about within the educational system, I'd like to pick a little bit out of Gary Govan's brain, because he is one of our very, very corporate astute advisory board members. And Gary, I'd like for a moment, let me see if I can describe what I believe a business contract is. And I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, that means that someone makes an agreement with another person to do something. And it involves money, a transaction of money or bartering or whatever. And if you don't meet the contract, then you become, liable for certain consequences that can be taken to court and that kind of thing. What else can you tell us about a business contract?
Well, it also involves the integrity of people that are involved, and that's important to feel comfortable with the integrity that exists between you and the person that you have the contract with.
Mm-hmm.
Because that allows the contract, our guidelines for the agreements of the form, and what we're all trying not to do is spend time in court solving problems. The problem is to have the contract fulfilled. And so the integrity of the individual is important.
This integrity that you speak about, Gary Govan, is, I say that I hold on to my integrity. That's very, very important to me. And to me, that means basically that my word is my bond, that what I say I will do, I will complete it. To the best extent necessary, I will do, by any means necessary, I will commit to doing, to finishing what I said I would do for you. If it's cleaning your house, if it's fixing your garden, if it's your plumbing, if it's I'm buying something for you. I guess whenever we go into a store, we're entering into a contract, aren't we?
Correct.
Okay.
One of the things that I want to point out, though, is that a contract can be renegotiated. And a lot of people kind of leave that out. They'll say, whoops, this isn't working for me, and I've got to sit down and work it out because I'm not in this to go broke or, plan bankruptcy allowed by the law.
Right.
I don't And contracts can be renegotiated.
Yes.
And I think you need to realize that. Then when you really make your word as your bond is a commitment, and that is a separate, in my vocabulary, those are two separate issues. And
oh, okay.
I make it to you to be supportive to you. And that's what Donna and I have done with you, and you have
yes.
with us. But and if something in that commitment isn't working, we have to say, well, we need a shift in this commitment so that we're more comfortable or you're more comfortable. A contract
yes.
is one of the same things, and then you renegotiate it and you put it in writing. Often good letters between people also do the same purpose so that people know where everybody's standing. One of the problems that we had in our economy this last year was people made contracts that they couldn't keep.
Yes, absolutely. Hence the economy, the issues that we're having with the economy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So anyone else want to jump in and say anything or have any questions about this integrity issue that Jerry Govan is bringing up and what the business contract, because we're going to move and see if there are things in the business contract that transfer over into the social contract we're going to talk about this morning. Nazim, you have anything you want to add to this business contract concept and integrity?
Well, I think that just like Jerry was saying, integrity is really key. And when two businesses agree to do something, they're really depending on the other person having the integrity and the compassion and wherewithal to do what they say they're going to do. Now, even
yes.
though you have a written contract and it's bound and there's legal consequences, you know, both parties know they don't want to pursue the legal entity in order to make sure that they get what they said they're supposed to get. So they are really depending on the person having a heart to go ahead and follow through what they said they were going to do in the first place. And that's very important right there, is focusing on people having the compassion and heart to comply with the wishes that they said that they're going to follow through with.
And, you know, that's interesting when we talk about this renegotiation issue, because I'd like to talk about that, too, in the social contract when we move through that. And that is, I know that we can renegotiate in social contracts, when, especially as Nazim is talking about when we have that heart, the heart is in place, and we're talking about the compassion for the individuals to express to one another that are in the contract. I don't see that very much, and I know that some of our students, and we're talking about the adult learners out there who are going to school with financial aid issues and cars that become repossessed and rental contracts that expire and they have to move out. There's not much heart that I hear coming out of that, or renegotiation. And that's one of the problems that we have, is that the student may lose some of the financial aid, and we may be able to get it back at the end of the month, but the landlords or the car companies, banks or whatever, aren't willing to extend their heart to allow this person to continue in school and in their life. And that's where we have a little problem with these business contracts, Jerry and Nazim, is that the heart, that compassion you speak of, I don't hear it.
I see your point, and each case is individual, and sometimes you can call and without getting anger involved, you get
mm-hmm.
people and resolve. And sometimes, again, like we had a case on where the professor was arrested the other day, the emotions of the situation interfered with the rational sides. And so we have to keep our emotions out and get into the being real and making commitments that you can commit, that you can keep. Because if you can't keep, you have to call up and say, I can't keep this commitment. We were unsuccessful in our endeavors to do what, as you outlined, more financial aid or different things. But so you make boundaries of your commitments and without the emotional, you know, what's the matter with you? You're not being honest, and you're pretty soon the voices are at a high pitch and nobody's listening. They're just screaming. And so we have to stay at that. I keep the emotion of it out, so the commitments we make are not just wishes. They are commitments that we feel we have a good opportunity to commit to,
yes.
to and complete. And often that's the missing element because the emotions get to it. And that pretty soon people are not really listening. One person's digging in their heels and the other person's getting angry. And there you go.
I think that's those are very good points. And going back to something that rides on what Nazim said, is that do you have what it takes to get into the contract? Do you have the heart in the right place? And basically the resources. I mean, when you make a commitment to go to school or to take on a job, you are entering into not only a business contract but also a social contract where you should have the resources. And some of us don't even know what resources we need, and that's why they need to call White Apple Institute and talk to one of our counselors so that they can get an idea of, am I ready to really get into school this fall semester or spring of 2010? Am I ready to engage in asking for a promotion and get into an employee training program? And before you do those things, your rent or your mortgage should be in order. Your car payments, all of the things that make your life run should be in order before you engage in extra activities. Don't you agree?
Absolutely.
Okay. That's pretty much what you were bringing in, Nazim, about the heart and the resources?
Yes, yeah, that's very true. And also along with that, we have to realize, I think Jerry was saying also, that we have to be ready to renegotiate when necessary, because sometimes, a lot of times, we enter into agreements, we don't know what's further down the road for us in our arrangement with this person or this school. We don't know.
Yeah.
And as we get closer, we find out that we really can't do what we thought we could do before. So then it's time to renegotiate. That's okay, because then what you need to do then is just admit it. Say, okay, I can't do it like this anymore. So what can I do now? And go to the person, go to the school, and go to the company and say, we need to renegotiate this because now my situation has changed.
Yes.
And I can no longer do it this particular way. I can do another way. Let's see how we could do it so we can both be okay.
And you know what? That is the validity for why social contracts are starting to come up. The vocabulary of social contract is starting to come up. President Obama is even mentioning social contracts. When we talk about, let's just go back for a moment and talk about what happened with Professor Gates. Here you have a Harvard professor, well-known, well-respected around the world, who for a moment forgot about the social contract, although it wasn't necessarily a piece of paper. And most social contracts are not pieces of paper. They are words that we speak, unwritten rules that we all know how to so-called act within our society. The police were responding to a call, which is their social contract to maintain and protect and serve us, okay? Something happened in the social contract that was held with Professor Gates and the police officer, and things got very, very heated, and it was supposedly, it's now got this racial overtone to it, but at the very, very beginning of it, the social contract that both parties had were broken because the communication was not there. Successful communication. Do you agree?
No, it's obvious in that case that emotions rule, and any time emotions are dominating, then rationale goes out the window.
Absolutely.
You see, because at that point, neither party is listening to the other party. And you have fire against fire. In that case, everybody burns up.
Well, we encourage our listeners to call in to Student to Teacher to Student radio show. We are at Blog Talk Radio / Student to Teacher. Please make sure you log in or just call in to 646 727 3758. We'd really love to have your opinion, your comments. Here's one thing that I'd like to say as we move into this social contract, is that, one, I said, I talked about communication, and I talked to, as Dorothy was reading, she talked about the socialization aspect of it. Do we know how to socialize with others? Well, I had a student, and I'm just going to call him JB, and see if we can look at his case and see how a social contract is developed. JB comes to me as a referral from his probation officer. He walks into my office with his pants hanging down, earrings in holes that I didn't even know the human body had. And you know what I mean, okay? And, you know, he walks in with a smug attitude, and he really doesn't, it's obvious he doesn't want to be there, but he's forced to be there. Well, this is where, I mean, I already have a social contract with everyone that's in my classroom, any of the teachers that I teach in my classroom. We already have that social, we know the rules. But JB enters the environment without having any resources, without knowing how to interact with us, and certainly not to interact with authority. He does not understand that. So what's the first step, do you believe, that we should talk about when we're facing the JBs, or let's call it what it is, those that are socially not adapting to the rules? What's the first step? Anybody have any ideas? You know, he's sitting in the chair, he's slumped down, he has an attitude, his probation officer is saying, if you don't finish this course, this training course, and get a job, you're going to be in trouble. Number one, he's
Go
ahead.
The great first thing is he has the question is posed to him, what do you want to do?
Right.
You know, what is your desire? What do you want to get from this process?
Right.
And so then we realize the consequences of your behavior. Do you realize what's going to happen, you know, depending on what you do? You know, pro or con, do you understand these things? A lot of times they don't really understand totally what the consequences are totally. And but now even though a officer might tell them, okay, well, if you don't do this, you'll be in jail. They understand that part.
He understands that consequence, yes.
That part. But,
right.
But as far as the positive consequences, they don't understand that part a lot of times.
That's right.
See, if you do this right, you can get that door open for you. You can get this job opportunity for you. You can get this business deal made for you. You can get this professor to listen to you more. You can get this relationship. You know, so the positive side. See, so basically, we ask them, what do they want to do? What would you like to have?
Right.
And then paint that picture and say, well, there are some consequences, and also there's some positive results from this action from you. But it's got to start with you and what you want to do. And then they need to have a contract with themselves. You know, they need to have
an idea with themselves.
With themselves, so they can look in the mirror and say, okay, you, this is what I'm going to promise to you, you see, and then make that fit. Because when they mess that up, they got themselves to deal with, you see. And so, you know, a lot of times they don't want that.
It's important for me to note, and I think someone else had a comment, as we're moving towards about 36 minutes remaining on the show, so we want to make sure we get everybody's comments in. We want to make sure that if you are thinking of some things you want to say, that you call in right away and not at the last minute of the show, where we don't get a full a comment from you. Again, the call-in number for student to teacher to student is 646-727-3758. Okay, now we're talking about how we're going to start developing this social contract with someone, and I've arbitrarily named him JB. And let me tell you that JB has two children, two sons. He is 20 years old. And his sons are, I believe they were averaging about 4 or 5 years old. They're just about ready to go into school. So the impression of their father has been that he's been pretty much an absent father, in and out of the juvenile system and Sheriff Ohio here in our Arizona system. So I think, Donna, did you have a comment you wanted to share with us?
Yes, I
guess I actually was kind of reminded by something that Nazim said, and that your whole idea this morning about the social kind of basing off of either our belief systems or maybe off of our previous social education from our upbringing.
Yes.
One of the issues that I know a lot about because of my past was communication. Communication was difficult in our family because it was hard to express ourselves. You know, we're good at it, and so there was a more of that stressful talking, and everybody knows that there's something wrong, but nobody can talk about it, or there's nothing wrong, but we're arguing about something. And a lot of that past training that I see in schools that we have encountered in our consulting and in our church work and in our class situations, I find looking a little bit deeper, but still following the social respect stance is important, because we had a young guy, I think we first met him at in our classroom. We were doing the teen classroom at our church, and he, just what you were describing, he sat down in the chair. He was drugged there by his mother.
Uh-huh. Right.
Stuck as far as he could into the center of the circle and you know, put the smug look on his face, crossed his arms,
right,
and basically said, "I dare you to try to make me talk," you know.
Right, right, exactly.
The problem of communication is that it wasn't him right there who hated us and wanted to, you know, do anything horrible. It was that his past had brought him to this stage, and he was probably thinking in his mind all of the times that people had pressured him to do this and this. He wasn't there with us. He was
right,
in his own mind, in an anger mode.
Exactly, exactly. And you talked about belief systems a moment ago, and we've been, you know, surrounding ourselves with that conversation for since the beginning of this show, because that is, he has developed a culture, okay, his own culture. And within his own culture, as Nazim was bringing out, he doesn't even have a self-contract. He doesn't even believe in himself enough that, to even make a promise to himself.
Right.
So somewhere, yes, go ahead.
Way of looking at it, but the other thing would be an honest, another, what I would maybe say an honest way of looking at it is that there is a contract with himself, and it is self-protective. This particular young guy, I said to Jerry, why would this be? And when I asked his mother, she said, he was raised in an alcoholic environment. My husband, who I divorced soon after he was born, you know, just was so in the alcoholic mode that there was a lot of difficulty with communication, and it obviously is showing up in my son, who's now in his late teens, you know, and it's
mm-hmm.
always. So I went immediately to the 12-step store and bought the best book I could on alcoholic behavior and read it immediately before next Sunday.
Thank you, that is a great, I wish we had more teachers like you, because that's the kind of thing that we're trying to get teachers to do, is to take that, make that kind of investment. Thank you for that. So what happened the next week?
Book. Nowadays, you can read most everything online, and it doesn't even...
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. You're right.
Yeah.
We've got resources out there, but, you know, again, you know, many of the teachers that call in to White Apple Institute say, oh, I don't have the time. Where do I have the time to do this when these young men and women come into my classroom, or even the older ones? I mean, JB, just because he's 20 years old, is representative. I've had students that are 45, 50 that have acted that way, maybe not with the same pop culture attitude of the pants hanging or the earrings, but certainly with this barrier to communication.
Yeah.
So what happened that next week when you came back after reading some material?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because it isn't one of those wonderful stories like I now knew what was going on and he now started.
Exactly, exactly. It takes time. These things take time.
Yeah, it wasn't anything like that. As a matter of fact, this is now approximately 4 years later, wouldn't you say, Jerry? 4 or 5 years later, this young kid, and the worst thing about this, and he's now an adult, he's just turned 18, And his mother has, you know, stood behind him in any way she could, mainly sending him to schools to that were for troubled children, and he's been in and out of the juvenile system as well, I believe. But he finally took something from some of those trainings and took it into his own desires to start a trade school. And I tell you, it brought tears to my eyes when she told me about 2 years ago. You know, some of this has started to make some sense to him. It can only make sense to the person who's going through it. They live in their own world.
Absolutely. We all do. We live in our own world, our own cubicles. That's right. Exactly. You can tell a lot about a person just in looking at their own little environment, can't you?
Yeah. And asking a couple of simple questions, like Jerry said, and we have one in our book that we happen to bring out where he said, I'll just give one brief example. Jerry
Please.
Junior high school himself, where this was back before the interracial happening was very common, and he was a white kid bused to a school that was one-third black, one-third Latino, and now one-third white because of the busing in Pasadena, California. Now, one of the things that Jerry kind of says kind of briefly in the book, you know, is that I just kind of stepped up into the role of keeping the no fighting matter going on because I've always been a peacemaker, you know, and this is what our book is a lot about, Jerry's experiences of how he kind of naturally was able to influence that. But one of the stories in there was how he was constantly being called to the principal, and the teacher was really wondering what he had been doing wrong all the time, that he was called every few days to the principal's office. And when it all came out, he said, well, please talk to the principal because I can't tell you. It was basically that he was called there to negotiate between students who would not tell the principal problems and who were getting held and getting in trouble because they didn't trust the principal would really be on their side. So Jerry...
They didn't trust the principal, you said? He didn't trust the principal.
Because it was an... And also
you're breaking up a little bit there. Just wanted to let you know you're breaking up. Are you traveling right now?
What? I was getting a call on the other line and they
I see. Okay. All right.
Ignoring the call, but it did interrupt.
Please continue. No problem.
So what happened was that Jerry was being called in because the kids trusted him because he had no prejudice. He had no agenda. He had no idea of why they should be right and the adults should be wrong or the system should be right and they should be... Jerry just doesn't carry right and wrong on his sleeve. He carries, what do you need? What is your... And the first thing...
What do you need? Like Nazim was saying earlier, what do you desire? Same thing.
Mm-hmm. What brought this to my mind when Nazim said that, I said that's exactly what broke down the fear of the person who was having the trouble. Because what they were being pushy about is that they needed something and nobody could help them or listen.
Yes, yes. Very good point. And that, going back to JB, the 20-year-old who sits in my office, those are the type of things that I must bring out because he's got to understand, and I thank you very much for bringing out something earlier about most all of us have a contract with ourselves, but it's most of the time when you're talking about the JBs of the world and the issues that we're discussing about many other people, they have a negative contract, and I think Nazim alluded to that, that it has to be a positive contract, and there have to be positive consequences. Okay, and many times we have these negative contracts with ourselves and with others and negative consequences, and so therefore we're stuck, you know, and it's just like I'm looking at this young man and realizing that with two young children that he has fathered, that if we don't make a change with him, we're going to see a continuous cycle, and I think that you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think that's what we as a board of White Apple Institute are trying to do is to change the cycle, to break that cycle. Right, Nazim?
Absolutely. Oh, yes. That's what we see here, you know, trying to break the cycle. And then when you break the cycle, you start new habitual patterns that the person can use to further their life growth.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, anything you need to that you feel that is important. When I talk about this social contract, the first thing that I'm going to do too is I'm going to ask the student what he needs and how he can be successful in this environment. Since I'm going to say to him, and this is my own way of communicating, I'm stuck here like you're stuck here. Okay, so how do we make this a successful outcome? You know, you're going to stay here with me for 16 weeks or however time, how much time that the probation contract reads. And so now we can sit here and we can do this every day, and you can slump in the chair and I can sit in my desk. And I think that was a really good point in the movie Good Will Hunting with Robin Williams. He did the same thing. It's like, you know, you can come here and we can sit here for this hour and then you leave, or you can sit here and we can do something to move from this place. And that's real important, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Oh, yes, for sure.
Now, before I get some further comments on you, because I know there's something in your book that you want to bring out that's going to relate to what we're talking about, I want to acknowledge all of the teachers, all of the educators out there who have really done a great job in building something we call PBS within the educational system. And that is that we have positive behavioral supports. And these PBS, or positive behavioral supports, are contracts that we have, and we develop them with students who have, very, very maladaptive behaviors in the classroom or on the school campus. And we have peers that agree to be part of that contract to help them because, of course, a teacher can't be everywhere. And so, unfortunately, they're working really good. We have some really great models out there across the country, and so teachers, we appreciate that. However, after they leave kindergarten to that high school classroom, then they're sitting in the community college or in an employee training environment, and they're still having these same issues that were maybe not addressed in K through 12. And that's why we have young men and women like JB with two children that somewhere along the line we are going to have to develop a positive behavioral support system for him after post-high school. And that's going to have to involve, this is the contract that I want to develop with you. I'm going to do this, and I want to know what you agree to do. Does that sound right, Nazim? Hello? Did I lose Nazim? I think I lost Nazim. We are having some technical difficulties
here. I'm here.
Let me see. Okay, let him get him back.
There we
did
go.
You get that
there
last
go, yeah.
part that I was, okay. Did you get that last part that I was saying? This is what I will do as your teacher, as your counselor, as your mentor. These are my areas that I would like to work on, my desire. Now I'd like to know what your desire is. And then I just shut up.
You're right. You know, that's a perfect route to go, and always letting them know that you're there as a partner, an equal partner, in the progress and process of their new development.
Absolutely.
You see, because too many times what they want you to do is to have total responsibility to, quote-unquote, fix them.
Yes. Oh, my goodness, do we run into that a lot.
See, just make it right. Just do it. Just fix it and just make it okay. Give me the job.
I don't have to be part of it,
class. You know, just do it. Just do it. You know, I'll sit here and wait till you give it to me.
Right, right. I don't have screwdrivers. I don't have any tools. I don't have anything. I believe you have them, Professor Applewhite, or our personal development consultant, Nazim. You have all the tools. I don't have anything. And when they come from that empty place and they're not even able to communicate that, as the young man that Donna was bringing out about, then we're at a loss. We've got to dig in there and figure out what tools and resources that individual is going to bring to the table and value them as equal partners in a contract. Now, that's hard for a lot of teachers, Nazim. Teachers don't like to hear equal contracts.
No, and it's very good also that also every step of the way have them paraphrase back to you what you're asking of them.
Yes.
So they can say, what you're saying is you want me to come here every day on time and present materials. Is that correct? See, that kind
exactly.
of format, so that you hear from their own mouth what you expect from them, and then they actually hear themselves say what they're going to do.
Yes. And there might be, now I'm going to say this as a psychologist, so I'm going to bring this part in. And I know that it's again, you know, with all due respect to all of our teachers out there, I know that we've got time constraints with our curriculum development and implementation within the classroom and all the other administrative duties that are placed on us. However, a social contract with a student can be as simple as today and for the rest of the week, I just want you to sit up in a posture that at least lets me know that we are in an equal partnership together. And at the end of that week, that there would be some type of reward, not necessarily money, but the reward could be that you have 10 minutes without me in your face. Sometimes that's a reward. You know what I mean, Nazim?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
That's a reward, you know, because they don't, like, exactly, they don't want to be there already. So I'll get out of your face. That'll be your reward. But I'm expecting that you'll change this attitude, you know, change your communication method with me. Because the way you're communicating, as Donna brought out, the things that we want to talk about, we don't talk about. We're starting to argue about things that don't even relate to the real issues. And so social contracts make us start putting things on the table, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have in your book?
You know, Professor Apple, I want to mention something actually, you know, from the book,
sure,
too, that
please.
Relates here, is that we have to always be in a position to pump them up with positive feedback.
Okay.
When you have students that do not want to engage positively, they'll flop down with the pants and the, you know, all the body piercing, all the attention getting devices that they have.
Right.
They're looking for attention. So
exactly.
We need to give them attention. So what kind of attention? Stop, 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 straighten up. No. We need to
talk about.
We need to feed that inner child inside of them. We need to do that. So what do? We validate them. We say, look, young man, let me tell you what I see right here.
Yeah.
They know you're going to say, we see a little punk here with his pants hanging down. No. What you might say is, I see a wonderful creation of God right before me.
Oh, wonderful. I love that. Isn't that a wonderful way for us to address all students? You know, Nazim, you hit on a point there, and I don't want you to forget what you're going to bring out here, but I just want to add this in, and I don't want everybody rushing to try to take one of my classes, but I do want to let our listeners know out there, and I encourage you again to call in so you can discuss this with our board members. Our number is 646-727-3758, and you're on the Student to Teacher to Student Internet Radio Show. One of the things that I do to validate students at the very beginning is I give them all an A. Now, I can tell you there are many of my colleagues that have a real issue with that. But with that A comes a responsibility. Now, you know, the A carries a certain amount of points, and so you must maintain these points in order to keep your A. But they start off with a very positive outlook, not only about the schoolwork, the coursework, but about themselves. And that's why I like what you said just now. Very good about the positive feedback. Please continue.
Yes, and that's very important. When I stand before a class, when I have the opportunity, and I look out there, I tell them all. I said, I am so blessed and honored to have such a wonderful, wonderful display of positive energy coming from you to me.
Yeah.
I see there are wonderful receptive spirits out there just waiting to have a few tools that, God willing, I'll be able to give to them to help them get to the next level of evolvement, first as a human being and as a contributor to our society.
And they start looking behind them. They just figure, you can't be talking to me.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh,
that's true.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Exactly. And I'll tell, you know, I'll take one of the girls. I'll say, look, Julia, let me tell you what I see. I see a beautiful, beautiful contributor to life out here. I see that in you. And she'll say, me? I said, yes. Now, I'm telling you, what I'm seeing is not what you might see in the mirror right now. I'm seeing beyond the face and the pre-makeup and the mascara and all that. I'm looking inside of that. I'm looking inside at the Julia inside the Julia, all right, that needs to have what I'm trying to give her right now. And I'm saying I'm noticing it, and I want you to notice it also. It's there. It's there. You have a wonderful spirit inside that can contribute to life out here and benefit me and the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
You see, it's right there. It's right there. You've got it. You've got what it takes. And I know you have an unstoppable spirit. And once you, once we together help find a motivation button within you and you start pushing it, there's nothing that can stop you from advancing in any level you want to get to in life.
Whoa, whoa, that is so powerful, what you just said just now. And as Dorothy was reading earlier about our description, it fits into the factor that she spoke about that, however, when teachers, counselors, and adult learners from varying ethnic and cultural groups are engaged in any classroom or workplace environment, there must be a new form of social contract, and it must be developed and implemented differently than anything that we've seen before. And I hope, now we're not getting a lot of listeners calling in right now, but for those of you that are out there listening to us, because we know that we have listeners, on, we have a lot of people out there right now that is probably shaking their heads and saying, this sounds right. We're asking you to at least step outside the box and do some of the things that you're hearing us talk about today. Implement a social contract in a different way. Believe in your students. Help them to believe in themselves and empower them. See them as positive images. And I thank you so much, Nazeem, for bringing it out. That is one of the most important things that if I have teachers leaving my workshop with just that sense of I want to do this, I'm happy. Forget the other stuff. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And also keep in mind that as teachers, our spirit is there to serve their spirit.
Yes.
Spirit is there to serve their spirit.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and so we're in this together. We're in this together.
Right.
And when we're teaching, we are actually teaching ourselves at the same time. Our spirit is out there sitting in the classroom like their spirits are.
Yes.
You see, and so we're learning and growing in the process along with them, along with them. And once they understand, once their inner child really is touched by what we're saying to them, then they will bond to us more readily and be receptive to social contracts and to how we're trying to redirect them in their own path of development.
And I guess
that's
that
important.
Leads back to the integrity that Jerry Govan was talking about at the very beginning, that is, we're asking them to have integrity. We're showing them that we have integrity, that we're going to follow through with what you say. I want to say something about JB because this also came out, and it took about 4 weeks. It wasn't an easy thing, and as Donna was bringing out earlier, these things don't just happen overnight. We have some movies out there that kind of indicate that once a teacher starts doing this, all of a sudden, the student is going to start waking up and everything's going to be rosy. And it doesn't happen that way, right, Donna? I think we lost Donna and Jerry on the road there. But the bottom line in all of this is, too, is that we have to believe. We have to believe, and that's what I hear all of us saying. We have just a few moments left here. We have about 10 minutes remaining on our show, Nazeem, and we appreciate all of the things that have been brought out, but I want to make sure that we have enough room for Dorothy to read off some resources that she's been looking into this week for some of our listeners. So we'll come back in just a moment, Nazeem, for you to close our show. And I have an inspiration. So, Dorothy, would you like to give us some news about what's happening? What's some resources that we can tap into out there?
Oh, yes. There's also, besides the local community colleges, there's disabled resource centers and adult reentry programs.
Oh, that's right, within the community college system. That's right. Yes, that's right. A very good point.
for potential college students over age 50 with non-visible and mental disabilities. So if you know of anyone, listeners out there who need more information on this, please call in White Apple Institute at 480-659-8582. And also, Arizona residents should look into the Arizona Bridge to Independent Living for housing. Housing, and they offer other resources as well. And if you need any help with those accommodations, or if you need help staying into a vocational school, or in employee training programs, please feel free to visit our website, whiteappleinstitute.org. And also, I want to remember Wendy Duncan, our sponsor, one of our sponsors. She's at 480-620-6013, and she offers Farmers Insurance products.
Okay, all right. That's important. That's very important. We need insurances for our social contracts as well as the business contracts, right?
Yes. And so, listeners out there, we invite you to forward the email on or let your friends and family know, because it may not be that it's in your situation. Some immediate family or friend has needs, but they may have someone who could benefit from our services.
You know, that's so true, Dorothy. And, you know, you bring up a point, and I was going to say this before I brought you on. One of the things that we found out about JB in about the fourth week is that he had trouble hearing, and he never wanted to admit that. And one of the reasons that came out is because he saw someone with a hearing aid, and they were laughed at on the school grounds, and he never ever wanted to be in that position. So actually, JB had a serious enough hearing impairment where he wasn't able to communicate very well in the classroom, and no one ever spotted that or talked about it or even followed up, because, you know, they do regular testing in the schools, K-12, but no one followed up with it. And so that he was falling through the cracks at that point. And, of course, you know, I should mention that he's a high school dropout, but he started dropping back in again, and that was important. So we hope that any of you that know someone like the JBs or Donna Govan's explanation of someone that she knew that had some of the same communication issues, we encourage you to contact us. Now, Zim, you have something that we could wrap this all up with as far as anything that we can use to start developing this social contract between students and teachers?
Well, yes. I want to go back to the idea of validating them. Once they're validated, they're more apt to go ahead and agree to a social contract, because they feel that you are the one to help them. Because, you know, too many times the youngsters, young adults also, have been betrayed, and so relationships have failed. They have a history and pattern of failed relationships.
Absolutely.
So when they see you coming along, they figure you're another one that's going to fail them, going to say something that you're not going to live up to, your own contract, and you're going to just leave them.
Yes.
You see? So therefore, it's important to make them feel good. And validation, see, leads to solid high self-esteem, high self-image, high self-worth, high self-confidence. You see? And so now, when parents ignore their children's feelings, they will come to believe that their feelings are not important.
Yeah.
And when parents systematically threaten, berate, or punish their children for a display of emotions, those little ones learn that emotions are dangerous things to express. And then they also internalize that their emotions need to be held inside and hidden, which can transform into depression, rage, and a heightened sense of low self-worth.
You're not kidding. And that's a very important part. On television last night, on the Larry King show, there was a mother on there with her 15-year-old son who is pondering transgender operations in the future. And one of the things that one of the speakers said on the show is that when your child is willing to even talk about the emotional issues surrounding their sexuality and their gender, then you're doing something right. Please don't shut that down, that emotional expression, because when you shut that down, you cancel the social contact that parents have with their children. Because
that's
right. We do, right? We all have social contracts with each other. Marriage is a social contract, any type of relationship. And so we need to figure out, as you said, we've got to start with that validation first. I truly believe that. Validation, however we do it, by your means, when you walk into a classroom, you tell them how beautiful they are. By my means, I tell them that they all have an A. And so whatever way that we can do this, teachers, educators, any of your the parents out there listening, please take this to heart because it's important. That is why we have so many students that drop out. That is one of the variables. That's why we have so many teachers who burn out, is because the social contracts that we held in the past are no longer applicable in today's society. Is that agreed?
That's right. You see, they see that you failed and breached your social contract, so why should they keep theirs?
Exactly. They're the model. They're the model. We're all the models, aren't we? Especially as teachers and parents.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get away
Absolutely.
From that. And then the adult learner who sits in our classroom at 30 years old, who maybe has dropped out of school and had a hard time coming back and saying, okay, I'm going to learn computers. Okay, I'm going to try to do this. And they've got all this baggage and all these negative belief systems. The social contract that that professor or that instructor has with that student needs to start day one. And that becomes that validation. And it becomes a positive environment versus a negative environment that breeds failure.
Yep,
I don't know
right.
how many times, yeah, I don't know how many times I've walked into classrooms and felt the failure. You know, I do a lot of teacher evaluations, and I walk in the classroom, and there's no interaction going on. The students are there. They're maintaining their social contract to be there. And the teacher is teaching, but are the students learning? Wow, did you get that? Did you get
Absolutely.
That part that I just said? The teacher is teaching, but are the students learning? The parent is preaching, but is the child truly listening? And then as we become our own parents, right? Isn't that what your book is about?
Oh, yes.
Are we listening to the parent and the child within ourselves?
Mm.
I know one of the things that I... Go ahead, please.
I'm sorry. And what happens, see, when we don't do that, and most times we don't, we kind of drown out that little child inside. We have confusion problems, headaches, and all kind of symptoms of depression and so forth, road rage, all kind of issues because we haven't reconciled ourselves within ourselves. We haven't done that. We haven't done that. And that's why it's important. We have to, you know, have that first social contract ourselves with ourselves. It starts there.
Yes,
because
if
the teachers haven't done that with themselves, they surely can't expect the students to do that with themselves.
Exactly. And with 1 minute remaining on the show, we've got 60 minutes remaining. Is there anyone that would like to bring out something inspirational to say to our listeners out there? If you have anything that you'd like to say. I have one that I'd like to share. It's from The Father's Book of Wisdom, and it's written by H. Jackson Brown. And what he says is that the biggest mistake you can make is to believe that you work for someone else. And the reason why that's so important when I'm speaking to students is that you always are working for yourself. From the very beginning of your life, you're working for yourself, on yourself, with yourself. And that is social contract that you maintain. And so listeners out there, as we begin to close the show, Nazeem, I'm going to play some of that beautiful music that you have provided us, and I thank you so much for that.
More than welcome.
Thank you. You have a great week. Thank you for being part of the Student to Teacher to Student Internet Radio Show. And we hope that you join us. We look forward to you joining us next week. Bye-bye now.